Hello, hello. How's it going? This is James, Coach Comeback Holland, with another Real Estate CPR live Q&A call. I hope you've been having a successful and prosperous week. Let me just make sure I got all the recordings going. We've lost the last few calls, which is crazy frustrating. So this is why I'm trying something new, because fool me twice and I will never use your service again. So so now I've got three different recordings going. We should definitely be able to get a good recording out of this in case you are not here listening in live. So those of you who did submit your questions, and we'll go through those really quickly. And as always, if there are any other questions, make sure you post them in the members area or send them to me before the live calls and we'll take care of it. So, again, this will be James Holland with Real Estate CPR. We're going to do live real estate questions. So I have a list here of the ones that were sent in. And if anyone live here presses the button and raises their hand and wants to talk, now is the time to do so. I believe you press *2 to raise your hand and ask a question. But if you're just wanting to listen in and be here, if something comes up, press the button. I'll unmute you, and you can ask away. Otherwise, I'll just go through the questions that were written in the members area and emailed in. So the first one we have here is, let's see, all right, so what is, it's kind of a long email here, what's the best way to get leads when you have a very low budget to start? Okay, so this question is so common, that's why I actually created all the new trainings. These are all in the members area besides just the direct mail, which is just, I said, my most preferred. You'll notice all the trainings for sites like Craigslist, owners.com, you know, my new favorite, which I've been doing, I just put in another order here now, is, and I actually got this from another company. I am going to be testing out a new campaign here with flyers and door hangers. You know, I mentioned this in a previous call, I believe, that I at yellowletters.com, you know, go to coachlikes.com/yellowletters so that you get our 15% discount. That's to all members that I've worked out. We get a discount through them now, which I said I'm preferring them over call a click to mail now. But postcards, you said, are usually can range anywhere from about 39 cents to about 45 cents a piece, and then that gets mailed out to the doors, and then you hopefully get them back. Well, the flyers and door hangers can range anywhere from 10 to 20 cents. So we're talking half, if not a third, of your cost. And they are crazy effective. So I'm here in Vegas right now, and this is probably the second time I got a coupon, which is another thing you can implement, putting on there. Maybe they get a free coupon for something. A coupon for a service called Bite Squad. What they do is basically they've negotiated the menus and everything of a bunch of different restaurants, and you just call them and they'll have it delivered. So even your favorite restaurants that don't offer delivery, you can go to this website called Bite Squad, place your order, and they bring it to you. And they have a GPS tracking. Every driver has to have it on so you can actually see exactly physically where they are, to the point of watching them pull up to your door. Gotta love technology. It's crazy. And so yeah, I use them. They got me by, and usually I just get annoyed by this and toss it out, but there's a lesson here in marketing, is that your You're only annoying in marketing if it's something that someone doesn't want. If it's something they're interested in, they'll be happy you gave it to them. So we were at the movies the other night and come out and I have this flyer on the car, which I said usually annoys me. I see something on my windshield and I immediately throw it out. But being the pig food lover that I am, I saw deliver all your foods in the flyer and I kept it. And I used it because, you know, working from home, I'm here all the time and working all day long in front of the computer and stuff. Sometimes I don't get a chance to stop and get out and go get food. Or my awesome wife, Cece, is busy or something and we just want something brought to you. And you may not be in the mood for just pizza, which is about all that delivers. So, you know, this was an effective way to market, was just going through parking lot at movie theaters. And they happen to be get someone that's targeted. So you will get, obviously you get people who are less targeted, but if you have a low budget and you don't mind, you know, getting a little workout, I would suggest you can get, you know, let's say they're 10 cents a piece. If you just happen to be, I don't remember the exact price. I can pull it up here in a second, but let's say they were 10 cents for a flyer each and you got 1,000 of them. If I'm doing the math right, that would make 1,000 flyers $10. Not including shipping or whatever. You know, it may be 17 cents or a little higher. Even still, that comes out to 1,000 flyers for $17 if I'm making sure the math is right. Let's just do it 17 times. I want to make sure I'm way off. Hold on. Let's say 10 cents times 1,000. Okay, it's $100. That's what I was making sure that didn't sound right when I said $10. So we're talking 1,000 flyers for about $100. Now, if you can't, if you don't get one deal out of 1,000 flyers on cars, neighborhoods, doors, needless to say, it's just almost impossible. Yeah, the direct mail can be a little bit more targeted, obviously, because you can set the criteria so you know who you're reaching first. But the key with flyers is to make sure everyone is targeted is you put the thing on the flyer that says $500 referral. I used to use these business cards for years, and I got so many leads and calls out of them because they were the business cards that looked like money. It actually looked like, if you saw it on the ground, and I would do this, I would leave them everywhere, and I would watch people running for it. It actually looked like a dollar, like a $50 bill or $100 bill or something folded up. That's how it looked. It was actually done really well, and it really looked like money. And it would say, you know, looking to sell your house, call. But on the other side, it said, keep this card. We pay $500 or more for referrals. All you have to do is give us the address. And then I had, you know, link for more information or a phone number. So if you did the same concept with the flyers, which is what we're organizing right now, and you have a low budget and don't mind, you know, going out and walking around, you know, leave them anywhere or do this in addition to, you know, just like I used to do with my business cards, leave these things everywhere. When you go to the gym, you know, you have to leave them in the car. On your way walking in, you're slapping them on the cars that are near you. And you go to the movies, you're putting them on the parking lot or at the casino or going to the grocery store. You know, I would leave them in the carts, put them on the cars, stick them in the aisle so that they're sticking out. Library, I used to put them in books so someone would get a book. And get it home and open it up and my card would fall out. I mean, I put them everywhere, as creative as you can, especially the dollar ones. I said, you know, if you put it, go to a store, you're in a grocery store aisle and you like kind of put it in between the two cereal boxes and it's sticking out. It looks like a dollar bill is sticking out. Somebody's going to run over and grab it. And because they're so ridiculously cheap, you know, yeah, sure, some of them are going to toss them, but some same with the postcards when you mail them. Not everyone's going to open those and read those and toss them as well. So for the price, business cards, postcards, door hangers, flyers, that is where I would start, other than the stuff that's in the members area, like Craigslist, getting referrals, you know, getting bird dogs to get the deals for you. Just, you know, put together a Craigslist ad, say you're hiring bird dogs, teach them how to find deals and have them doing it, and say you'll close and you'll pay them for the closing. So there's lots of different ways, just using what you have in the members area and ideas like this to be able to close deals, even if, or get new leads, even if you have a very low budget. So you can make this work. Let's see. Hope that answers that question. The next one here is, what is the best way for me that I like to lock up deals, lock them up? Well, by far the best way is to get the signed contract. Just use the contract that's in the members area. And once they sign the contract, you know, the deal is yours. No one else can buy that property while you have a signed contract. So that's by far the best and only way. I'm not really sure. I understand the question of locking it up, because that's really the only way to really lock up a property, is by having a signed agreement, purchase and sell agreement, saying that you're agreeing to purchase it. So I don't know if you're trying to get creative in other ways to lock it up. Like, you can do lease options or options to buy, notes and liens and owner financing and all that, but it's still going to come down to, you know, I'm doing air quotes here, to quote-unquote lock the deal up, so that by my definition, locking the deal up means no one else can buy it. You got to have a signed contract. I don't know of any other way to really prevent anyone else from buying it, to have the deal as a lock without having a buyer, the seller, signing, saying he's agreeing to sell it. So maybe I'm missing something and there was different, you're asking something different, I guess. If this was you and you're hearing this and you asked this and that didn't cover it, please resend the question or elaborate a little bit so that I can explain if I didn't miss it. But yeah, there's use what's in there. The only way to lock up a contract is have a signed agreement saying their person is agreeing to sell it. Otherwise, anyone can buy the property to whoever he signs the contract with first. Okay, next one here you have, oh, this is a good one because it makes me think that that some of you are skipping around and not going through all of the modules, which is why we moved to the new platform. You know, before I had people complaining because the old site, I used to have the content dripped out where you'd only get one module every week, and people were saying they wanted to go through it faster and get through, and I said no, because you try to take it all in at once or you skip around and you get confused and you end up asking questions and stuff. That's covered by not going in order. There's a reason why it's set up that way. But we moved over to the new platform, which is on the school, which actually tracks, which is better because it tracks your progress, and I can actually personally go in and see if you've watched a module. So if you're asking me a question on a module and I say that's covered in the video and you say I watched it and it wasn't clear, I can actually go in and see if you watched the module and how much of the video and the training you actually went through. So I will know. But this one is kind of funny because someone's asking, what is my direct mail list criteria? Now that I know for a fact is covered in thorough detail in the video on buying leads in the main members area. So if you're asking this question, I know you did not watch the video, but I'll just briefly go through what I look for. And it changes depending on the market and where we're going to. You know, just like I mentioned in the main training, the numbers for upstate New York and Poughkeepsie are not going to be the same as Sacramento County, where it's so such a populated city that all I need is a few zip codes, whereas Poughkeepsie, I need an entire Dutchess County and the three counties surrounding it just to get enough leads to even be worth looking at. So the numbers won't be the same across every market. You have to, you know, kind of use your best judgment and learning for the criteria. So I'll give you the general criteria I look for when I'm, you know, getting my leads from something like ListSource is absentee. I do in-state and out-of-state, but if I have a ton of leads, like say my results, just for number's sake, I'm just going to throw stuff out there. Say my for number's sake, when I put in all my criteria, I still have, I got 2,000 results, and all I'm trying to do is mail 1,000. Then that's when I get pickier on my results, when I narrow it down to 1,000. So for each one of these, I'll give you the main one and then how I can narrow it. So I always do in-state and out-of-state, absentee-owned. But if you have enough results and you're trying to get picky, then I would just do out-of-state only. Because then there's, historically, they are more motivated. The next thing is single-family residence. And I usually check the boxes that say duplex, triplex, and quad, even though by most state standards, I say most because I'm not sure if it's the entire U.S., but I know California, Nevada, by most state standards, anything under 4 units is still considered a single-family residence. Yeah, even though that sounds funny because it's a duplex or quad and it has 4 units, anything under 4 is single family. If it has 5 units or above, that's what they consider multifamily. You start getting into apartments, and it's a totally different criteria. For the most part, 4-plex and below is still treated like a house in a technical aspect. So if you check the box for single family residence, you will still get duplexes and quads anyway, but I still check them just to make sure. Maybe the OCD in me won't let me not check it. So those are the main ones so far. Absentee-owned, single-family residence, and high equity. These are the main three. All the other stuff you can start to change, like zip code, city, loan balance, and all that good stuff. The main ones are absentee-owned, single-family residence, and the amount of equity. So I like to see 50% and above. You know, we really, if you're going tight and you need to go more numbers, the lowest I will go, and then again, this is depending on the price point, the lowest I will go is 70% equity. 70 to, sorry, I'm going the opposite way, 70 to 30. It's always confusing when I'm saying this. I would go to 30% equity as the max. So 30% equity means the house is worth $100,000, they owe $70,000. That is the absolute worst case scenario. But I usually put 50 to 100%. That's just where I start. 50 to 100% equity. So if I don't have enough numbers, say I'm trying to get to 1,000 and I only have 500, then I'll increase that to 40%, 40 to 100%. And then if I still don't have my numbers, I go to 30 to 100%. And if I still don't have the numbers, then I change nothing else. I absolutely will not go above 30, but again, depends on the pricing. You know, if you're in Beachside, Santa Barbara, and the homes are $800,000, or, you know, let's just go $1 million to add zeros to make it easier, that means it's worth $1 million and he owes $700,000. Well, we got $300,000 of wiggle room there. You know, I'd even go up to 80% in that. But say you're in the east or southern areas somewhere where homes are still being bought for $10,000, just for number's sake, and you go to 70% equity, you know, buying it for $7,000 and it's only worth $10,000 is never going to be a deal. Those that are that low, anything that's, you know, they're selling for $10,000 or $15,000 or less, because of closing fees, final fees, and no matter what else it's going to cost, you know, $500 to $1,000. There's not even a question. Don't even think about it. Don't even have to do any research or consider what else it's going to take. If the price of the home retailing in the area and they're selling for, you know, $15,000 or less, unless it's an extreme circumstance where it's a killer deal, you should never be offering more than $1,000. You ain't got to look at it. Just offer them $1,000. These are deals they just want to get rid of. You're going to turn around and sell it for $3,000 or $4,000. That's it. That's the best you can do. So in that case, you know, putting 50% equity wouldn't even be enough to really make a deal there. So just so you know, the criteria doesn't, it does, you got to use your own judgment, again, depending on your average price. You know, so when I'm saying these numbers, I'm talking about the average price of, you know, say about $100,000, these numbers work. Of course, you get way higher and you can be a little more lenient. And as you get lower in price, you got to be way more strict. So I hope that makes sense. Let's see. So yeah, that's the basic criteria. If any more criteria you need on that, then just watch the videos. Wow, this one's interesting because talking about doing flyers. Someone asks, what about door knocking? If you have the leads and you buy the leads with the addresses, would you just go right on knocking on the door? That is some brave stuff there. I'm not going to say no, because I, you know, try not to deal in absolutes and just say no, because I'm sure you can get a deal knocking on doors. Jordan Belfort made his millions just by walking down the street and knocking on doors and getting 100 doors slammed in his face, but you get the one and you've got a deal. So for what we do, we're teaching virtual. I like to be able to do everything online, because you can reach more and faster. But again, if you have more time than money and you want to go knock on doors, I can't in good conscience recommend it in any means. I would maybe leave a door hanger, buy the leads on ListSource, buy door hangers, and actually physically drive around and put them on the doors. And that can save you the cost of mailing. I don't know if it'll work out the same what it costs you in gas. I haven't had anyone do the numbers on that, but what it costs you in time is more important to me. It seems like a lot of time for knocking, where you can get a lot of angry people for interrupting them, plus the people you miss and don't get them. But you know what? I would like to see, if you can get a deal from door knocking, contact me, and I would love to share the story, because I'm absolutely positive you can. It just seems way crazy time-consuming that there would have to be a better way. But, you know, if you can't find them, if they're not on Craigslist, they're not online, there's no active phone number, and you just want to go to the house and knock, maybe. But, again, that wouldn't work for absentees. If you're getting your list from ListSource and you're getting absentee owners, that isn't going to do you any good because they're not local. Yeah, so door knocking. I've heard people doing this door knocking for investors. So when you have a big known investor in the area and you're trying to impress them, I've heard people make some great long contacts by actually going over to the door and saying, I want to work with you, here's my portfolio. In that case, yes, you had a hot deal and you're trying to get to a certain buyer that you want to work with, yeah, show up, take them out to coffee, and try to swoon them to get them as a part of your team. But cold door knocking for sellers, just knocking and asking people if they want to sell their house, you could probably make a good script that can make it flattering. You know, if you're going to do this, let me know. It will, I'll help you come up with a good script anyway, but, you know, come up with something that says, you know, I'm moving into town, I'm an investor, I'm looking for homes in the area, curious if you happen to be interested in selling at the time, or if you know the owner, would you pass on my information? And then even then, if you know somebody else who may be selling, and give them your card, because you're going to come across a lot of renters as well. So it's just going to be really time consuming. I do feel like, you know, eventually it will pay off. So good luck to you on that one if you choose to go that route. Let's see. Next question. Oh, this is a good one. Okay. When cold calling leads, this is going to be a two-part answer here. When cold calling a lead, do I make an offer over the phone even if the seller says he's not interested in selling? I love this question. It's a great, great, great question. So for one, I never cold called any leads. I never, ever, again, cold calling sounds like you just have a list of phone numbers and you're going down the list asking if they're gonna, if they want to sell. For me, if you, you know, for example, if you're calling someone off Craigslist who has their house listed for sale and you're calling them, that's not a cold call. If you've done any type of marketing with your own Craigslist ad or postcards or flyers and they've called you, that's not a cold call. So I'm not sure what type of leads you'd be considered cold calling. And again, unless you just got a list of phone numbers of homeowners and you're just calling them flat out, which is not ever recommended because you just waste too much time. I would do a voicemail blast if you have the phone numbers, and get them to call you back using the script that we've talked about before. Get them to call you back and listen to your voicemail that says you're an investor, buyer, and blah, blah. And that pre-filters them. So even then, if they listen to your voicemail, they've taken two actions. They called you back, and they've listened to your voicemail and left a message. So again, it's still not a cold call. So you can be more clear on what kind of leads would be considered cold calling. Then I would be interested and be able to give you a better answer. But in general sense, we don't do any cold calling at all. Everyone you speak to should either be expecting the call one way or another or know what it's about. So the second part of the question, do you make an offer over the phone even though this seller says he's not interested in selling? So again, sounds like you've called some people who hasn't seen your ad, hasn't called you, and you just, you've gotten the list of owners and you're just calling them. You got their phone numbers and you're just calling them directly, the absentee owners. You know, I've mentioned this in other sayings. I always make an offer. If I've gotten to the point where I'm speaking with them or even communicating back and forth through email, whether they said yes, no, giving me a price, I always make an offer. Always. 100% of the time, if I speak to them or have made contact, even if I say, no, I'm not interested, I don't, my price is this, I want retail, no matter what it is, because I don't physically print them and it takes me all of a second to, you know, in the contract, write in their address and write in my offer, attach it to the email and send, I always send an offer. So they haven't given a price, they just simply say, I know you said you weren't interested. If you were, here's what I'd be willing to do. I could pay all cash, close in 3 days if you're interested. This offer is valid for 3 days. Great speaking with you. And that's it. Whether I send it in the email or I say that on the phone, okay, well, I know you're not interested and you're not going to sell. But if I were to sell, here's the best I could do. You know, something to think about. Offer is good for 3 days and hang up. If I have their email address, I rather send it so they have that in writing. If I don't, and somehow it is a cold call and I'm just on the phone, then yeah, I would throw out a number. If I can't get them to agree to anything and it's already a lost deal, Then yeah, then I spout out a number. There's a, when I was younger, I'll give you another example of why I do this. When I was younger, we have markets. We used to have markets in Sacramento. There was one in Galt and Roseville. It's called Denio's at Roseville. In Roseville, it's like a big, another word for it. I don't know if people on the other side are familiar with flea market or auction, or it's just a big, basically a big parking lot with a bunch of vendors who come there, set up their own space, and then they sell their own stuff. So it's a place where, I guess you can say it's like a gigantic yard sale by individual people. And, you know, for a while we were addicted to these just to get bargains. I can thank my mom for that one, bargain shopping. But when I, you know, got my car 18, 19, 20 years old, you know, it was a thing. It was like the fun thing to do every weekend. We would go out there and just, you know, you browse around and shop for stuff. Well, there's a certain, not even going to say this right, but there's a, trying to be politically correct, we'll just say there's a certain group of people who love to negotiate. They absolutely love bartering or negotiating the price. So they, you walk up and they tell you, how much is this? And you say $100. And you go, okay, thank you. And you start to walk off. And they'll say, okay, give me 80. And you go, I'm not really interested. And they say, okay, give me 75. And the longer you waited, the lower and lower the price got. You know, we used to make fun of our friends. If, like, you took his first price, the first price he gave you, you know, if you went to certain vendors and they had price tags on everything with stickers and everything, you know those weren't the right ones. So those of you who are from the U.S. who know the flea markets, you probably know what I'm talking about. But so there was plenty of times where I've had people say, you know, this is $100 firm. And, you know, even though I wasn't interested, wasn't going to buy it, and I wasn't going to pay $100, I would just say a number. I would say a ridiculous number. I would say, I'll give you 40 for it. The best I can do is 40. And then I would leave. And it wasn't 100% of the time, you know, probably the same ratio we talk about, 25 to 1. I'd be going to walk away, and they'd go, fine, just give me the $40 and take it. And I would get stuff at ridiculous prices just by throwing out a number. Because I'm like, I'm not going to get this anyway. What does it hurt to throw out a ridiculous number? They go, no, it's $100, my last one. Take it or leave it. And I go, I'll give you $30. You know, well, I know you said you're not, you're firm and your price isn't going to stay. If you did want to sell it, you know, $40, $30 is the best I can do. And then I'd leave. And then they would have time to chew on it all day. And there was a skill to this. You never did this right at opening, because in the morning they're still fresh. They still have the hope that more people are going to come, and they're not that negotiating. You come about 20 minutes at the end of closing, and they're about to be done for the day. That's when this works best. So you would throw out that ridiculously low offer. And so many times I would walk around, leave, and then they're closing the doors, getting everybody out, and he's packing up, and I'd walk by, and I'd go, $30, and he'd go, fine, take it, and I would get it for that price. So same thing applies here. Even though it's a no, and they say they're not interested, or you're nowhere near their price, you'd be surprised how many times you throw out that offer anyway. Something comes up, something changes, and all of a sudden, yours is the only offer, and it's looking pretty good, and they need the money right then. It's either take the money or go home with nothing, you know, close up shop and leave with nothing, or take the extra $30 and just be done with it. And it happens. It works a lot. So, you know, thanks for letting me share that story with you. Those were the good old days. So, yes, 100% of the people you talk to should get an offer, all of them, no matter what the case, and make it crazy low so you have something to negotiate, you know. If you're not close anyway, might as well throw an offer, let them think about it, and you may even get them to come back. Say it's $100,000, and you know you need to be at $50,000, and you go, you know, you send an offer for $30,000, and they go, absolutely not, we're not even close. And, okay, well, what would you take? And they go, no, I'm not interested. And then a few days go by, and you're after 3 days, yours is about to end, and all of a sudden you get an email that says, okay, I'll take 45, and you were going to take it at 50 anyway. So that's why you always send an offer. So to answer your question, even if they say they're not interested or they're not close or they're firm or they're way off, take an extra 2 minutes. You've already talked to them. You've gotten that far. Send an offer anyway. Everybody gets an offer. That's the rule. If you've talked to them, they get an offer. If you've communicated an email, you've talked about the property, they get an offer. Well, that is the last question I have here, I believe. We answered that one. Yep, I've answered all the emails and questions that came in. So the last chance, if anyone's here, you can press, if any of the ones that are live, if you've got something, you can press star 2. It'll raise your hand. I will unmute you. Nope. Or via the web, I think you can type your questions in. And I'll give it another second or two if I don't see anything. Okay, well, I hope you appreciated this call and got some of your questions out, and it was valuable. And again, before any of the calls, be sure that you email your questions in if you know you're not going to be able to make it live, and I will be sure to cover everything. So until the next time, make sure you keep progressing, keep sending offers, stay focused, stay motivated, reach out if you get stuck, and know that you can do this, and I will see you inside the members area on the next time. Have a great day.